birthday party?
Miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. I hope my Abracadamans are having a good week. Yes, I hope you had a good one. It's been an interesting week for me. Somebody actually paid it forward for me, which this was really cool because I've never had this happen to me. I had a total stranger offer me a piece of ham. Now, granted, now keep in mind, this wasn't like a piece of ham on a toothpick. It wasn't a ham sandwich. No, it was just one little old flimsy piece of ham. Yeah. So I ate it. So there you go. That guy was paying it forward, and he felt like I was in need of some ham, so he gave me a little old flimsy slice of a ham. And now he can probably go to heaven. There we go. I do want to give some show dates real quick. I will be actually this weekend. I'm going to be at the Idiot Box Comedy Club in Greensboro, North Carolina. You can get your tickets online at theidiotbox.com. If you have not done so yet, and if you are in the Greensboro, North Carolina area, come out and see the show. It's going to be an abracadam good time, baby. So you definitely want to catch that show. I also have my really good friend Shelly Belly with me. So it's going to be a good time. Be sure to check it out. Okay. You ever get up in the middle of the night and you think you might see like a shadowy figure there in the corner of your bedroom? And then you get to looking a little closer and you're like, does that guy, does he have my underwear? But then you realize it's just that big pile of dirty laundry that's been piling up in your bedroom. That's right, folks. Today's episode is brought to you by Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Yes. Now, if you're anything like me, I hate doing laundry. And yes, dirty laundry can pile up. So don't hesitate to take your laundry to Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services, located at 122 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give Bob a call at 865-951-3237. Bob also offers a delivery service for anyone who's a senior citizen or homebound. Guys, doing your laundry has never been easier. All you have to do is take your big old pile of dirty clothes, drop it off, come back, and your clothes will be clean, dry, and folded and ready to go. Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Check them out today. This episode is also brought to you by The Grove Barbershop. Now, guys, I've been getting my hair cut at The Grove for a long time. And owner and operator, Jeff Hackler, is an awesome barber. And the best part is, all you have to do is just make an appointment. You go online to thegrovebarbershop.com, select your time, select the day, and then show up. You show up, everything is clean, organized, and it's just you and Jeff. He gets your hair cut, gets you looking nice, and gets you out of there in no time. So be sure to check out The Grove Barbershop, located at 98 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give Jeff a call if you want to at 865-482-2210 and make your appointment at thegrovebarbershop.com. All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest is, well, first of all, she is just straight up funny. She is absolutely hilarious. Definitely one of the funniest comics out there working today, and definitely one of the hardest grinding comics out there working today. I mean, she has told jokes, I think, in 45 states right now. And, well, before the pandemic, she was hitting the road hard. The pandemic happened, but as soon as things open back up, she's back out. I mean, she's back out on the road now, doing it, grinding it, telling them funnies. She's also got a book out that you guys will hear more about in this episode on puns. Yes, she is a pun master as well. So I tell you what, if you guys will, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with the very funny stand-up comedian, Rena Calm. All right, we got stand-up comedian Rena Calm here on the Abracadam Podcast. How you doing, Rena?
Hey, great to see you.
Okay, Rena, I tell you what, I know who you are, and a lot of people know who you are because you literally travel all over the country. But if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, for sure. Hi, listeners. I am Rena Kalm. I am a stand-up comedian. Those things are true. I also do tour around the country all over the place, or at least I'm going to again, and I did before things stopped. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm known for now. I live on the road full time when I'm doing this out of a tricked out Prius, which is pretty cramped but neat. And yeah, I have performed now in 45 states. I was trying to get to all 50, but then had to stop because of this thing that happened to all of us globally. And yeah, so just picking back up, hoping to finish the final five this year. And I also have a book of puns on Amazon. It's called Once a Pun a Time, which normally, I have a copy of to show off right here, but I do not because I sold all of my copies on the road. So, yay,
And now let's
Amazon.
also give a big shout out to the background at Rena Calm, hashtag comedy. How clever and amazing is that?
She's got puns.
She's got the puns. And you know what else, though? You are a very funny stand-up comedian. One thing,
Thank
I do not
you.
blow smoke. I do not blow smoke. You know, I'm not the guy in the back that says good set when you didn't have a good set. I'm not that guy. If you wasn't a good set, I just don't talk to you.
Yeah, that's the best.
but I've known a handful of pun comedians, you know, but that's, I'm going to be honest. I am really going to be the first female pun comedian. So pun's your thing, huh?
I kind of explain the book to people as like dad jokes my father doesn't care for. And I something about my sense of humor, I don't know really that makes sense, even though I'm trying to own it. I told a joke at my gynecologist's office a couple months ago, and I mean it wasn't a pun, but it was just a very good joke. And I thought of it while I was there, and I said it to the receptionist at the gynecologist's office, and she laughed, but then she said, "You remind me of my husband." Again, this is a gynecologist's office. So she was, "You remind me of my husband. He's always saying stuff that's weird or gross that he thinks is funny." And I've never been so owned in my life. But yeah, I do puns.
And you know what I do, and I've never been one of these people that I don't separate female and male comedians. I don't. I just say
Thanks.
comments. I don't do that. But I will say this: I am loving what is kind of going on in the world of stand-up comedy right now. Is there is so much. There's a lot of great comics that are emerging that just happen to be females, and
True.
seeing, I think, you know, there's going to be a generation that's going to be inspired by you guys right now because, I mean, you're so much more visual than what it was when I was a child. I think that, I mean, we had, when I was growing up, I think Carol Burnett, Roseanne Barr, and Elaine Boozler, you know, were like the three, you know, female comic, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I
That you,
mean Joan Rivers was,
oh, Rivers,
cranking it. Yeah.
yeah, of course, Joan Rivers.
She's really like my style with kind of like slightly inappropriate wordplay or like,
Was the queen, you know, and I mean
Yeah.
she really was the queen. But now though, I think there's so many now, you know, and not like, I'm not bad comics, I'm talking good comics, you know.
I'm excited for this wave to continue because what I'm seeing is like just a little bit more of that, what's that thing, equality happening where I mean you're still seeing lots of lineups that are like eight dudes and one lady, and so I know that that's happening, that that's true. I think somebody actually did like a like did the math and broke it down where the amount of good working professional comics, it's actually already like a pretty even split as far as like gender. But what you see in at least the scene that they did the study in was that an overwhelming percentage of people who start comedy are men. Which I think is fascinating, just how people are in general. And I've met so many men and women that like validate this description where men are raised to feel like they should speak or be confident and, you know, have an opinion, and women are raised more to like be quiet and submissive and, you know, not embarrass themselves or whatever. Or maybe women are more practical and it's kind of a crazy thing to do. But yeah, I definitely think that those numbers even out once talent and professionality comes into play. But yeah, not all the way that the lineups are totally even yet, but yeah,
Some
we're getting there.
places, there's some places that now I see things so much. The way I do things is that actually there was a female comic that posted on Facebook the other day that she caught wind that a booker doesn't like booking female comics, you know. And I was like, this guy's not going to be in business too long. This guy's losing. This guy's an idiot, a moron. You know, I was told many years ago that well, you can't do a show with all females, all female lineup. You can't do it. And I was like, well, let's do it, you
Oh,
know.
I've heard it all, but I mean, even like the guy who is in charge of the biggest comedy festival in the world, the guy who runs the Just for Laughs, I mean, we're gonna get canceled if this goes to air. But I mean, he's being canceled kind of right now, but it's kind of one of those things where he's been like, when I say canceled, even that word is ridiculous. Like, he's still a person, he's still alive, he still has his business. Like, this call out on him has happened multiple times, but because he holds so much power in the comedy industry, it's just kind of been ignored. And honestly, the stuff that he's doing, as far as like he's not assaulting anybody or hurting people in that way, but when you have that much power and that much say in a huge industry that so many people dream of being a part of, and you're doing things like telling comedians, I'm not going to say female comics because let's not think of it that way, telling comedians that they can't wear those boots on stage or something, you know, like he wouldn't book women that wore tall boots or something like that. Like, things like that that are like, you've literally damaged people's shot at like success and career based on your weird like preferences that have nothing to do with this business.
Does he ha Was it just towards female comics or?
And definitely a huge issue with the LGBTQIA community, like the way that he would. I think, like, there was one comic that got as far as it takes so much to get into that space to be performing for this person. And somebody had just posted their experience about performing for this guy, Jeff Singer. I'll say his name. I don't know why I wouldn't, but performing for this guy and him saying, like, I've seen gay before about their act. And it's like, you know, you can't reduce people. A lot of what I'm working on right now is actually less puns and more. And my act right now is more, I'm doing a lot of talking about like labels and things like that because, and this is not a joke, but something I've been saying a lot is that I feel like a lot of times they divide us more than define us. And so, yeah, I'm happy to accept the label of comic, but yeah, I think that in this arena, that's kind of the most important one, right?
Absolutely. And you know, I want to say this one thing. You know, like I don't think any topic is really off the table if you have the skill level to make that topic funny. Now,
Absolutely.
and not every comic has that level to make every topic funny.
Absolutely.
But you know, you know, if people want to criticize a gay comic for doing gay material, they draw their material the same way as you do, I do, based off your life experiences. So
Well, also in that situation, I think it might have been more the case of like with a lot of things like that with identity stuff, it's like, especially in showbiz, like if there is, let's say, a gay comedian doing their set and they don't mention that they're gay, then they can be told that they need to do more gay stuff because they need to represent that identity, you know? And it's none of that's funny at all.
it's a lose-lose kind of situation
Yeah.
with that. And the gatekeepers in show business can be so weird. And you
Yeah.
know, and there's some venues I will never get booked at. I will never be booked at. I know I could smash the room, but they won't book me just because there's something about me they don't like. You know, who knows? You know, maybe it's the boots.
Yeah, you got to stop wearing those knee highs, man.
I'm wearing those knee high boots. But you know, also the thing about you also, Rena, that I noticed, now I know you like to take jabs at the dark stuff and a lot of things, but you know, <it's>, which is funny, by the way.
Only if it's funny.
Funny. It's funny. But you know, just like, you know, I mentioned earlier, your headphones bit, you know what I mean? And everybody, you know, we live in a day and age where everybody has damn some type of earbud in their freaking ear holes, you know? And I just thought, that's so clever. And that's so damn funny, you know? And
I missed that bit. Yeah. Thanks.
I love it. So,
but it is like what you're saying. It's true. Like it comes from such an innocent humor place of something that just I thought of that was just funny, and that's all it was. So the fact that like in order to get to that laugh, I have to bring up a kind of a dark scenario, or I mean, you never want to make a joke at the expense of like, I mean, for God's sake, you can't even say homeless anymore. You have to say unhomed or unhoused. I don't know. I lived in my car for like a year. So I feel like I identify with some of that struggle, but oh God, even, okay. See, now it's gone off the rails, but
maybe you can make that homeless joke because you've been,
I don't have my own home. But yeah, like I would never make fun of somebody in that situation or make fun of that reality. But that joke is through a lens of my own reality in such a way that it's not offensive. It's always gotten laughs in any kind of a room. So I've never even thought of it as being dark or offensive. It's just like, that's silly.
Well, no, you are really good at your craft, and it's always, but you notice one thing now, have you ever gotten this, like somebody who's not a comic, not an entertainer, they think of some crazy, super dark joke. And especially like they'll make fun of a homeless person. Oh, I thought of a good one. You know, and they come and tell you, you're just like, dude, that's no. You know what I mean? That's not cool. And you know, and I haven't always been a saint with that. I've got a story. This dawned on me. And you know, you grow by experiences in life. Man, I look so glowy. It's the glitter.
Showbiz.
A magic stripper. I'm David Coppercrotch, ladies and gentlemen, my glitter. A real life experience, I was street performing one time. And, you know, when you perform on the streets, you see a lot of homeless people. And there actually was a homeless guy, and he was, well.
Sorry, but if they're getting laughs, you're messing up. You know what I mean? Like, that's got to be like.
Well, street performing, you want people to tip you. So this, you know, that's how well I was doing. The homeless were watching. But this guy was like literally out of his mind. And I there for a minute, I started playing off the crowd, and then I kind of played off him a little bit, and he had no clue what was going on. But when I got in the car and drove home, just something hit me. It was like, Danny, that was somebody's son out there. You know, this guy, you know, he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't, you know, and I just, you know what I mean? It hit me like a ton of bricks.
Comedy, somebody who I love said this to me a couple years ago, that comedy is there to bring levity. And so even the darkest moments like need levity more than the others. That's why the equation is tragedy plus time equals comedy. Like maybe you need more time for certain tragedies, like, you know, but if you're bringing something up to bum people out, then it's not comedy. But if you're bringing something up, whatever it is, to make it feel better, then that's successful comedy. And I would say in a situation where, I mean, if he was kind of like, I mean, obviously, like, mental health is like a real problem, and that's why there are so many homeless people, that and the failing economy, but and the capitalist structure we all are victims of. But was he like bothering the audience, kind of, or like?
Not really. He just didn't know what planet he was on, and he was kind of looming in and out a little bit. And you know, I would be doing it was. it was an elephant in the room situation where it had to be addressed.
Right. That's right. So like, even if he's not physically, he's threatening the sensibility, or he, you know, he's changing the vibe, and it's weird if you don't address it. And I'm sure you didn't make fun of him and be like, oh, you probably don't talk to your parents, you know, like something like that. Like, I don't know. It's at that point, everybody's uncomfortable. So you addressing that guy is bringing levity to the awkwardness that everybody's experiencing together. And you know what? If he's crazy enough, I'm sure he didn't notice.
He had no clue. Now, let me ask you this. How long have you been doing stand-up comedy, and where did it all start for you?
I've been doing comedy for about 10 years now, a little more than 10 years. And so now I'm a lifer, you know, because after the last year, it's like, well, I have invested already my youth. So, you know, I'm going to just keep at it. But I started in Chicago. I did improv for a while before I started stand-up. So stand-up has been 10 years, but Chicago is great for learning the ropes for all kinds of comedy. And now I feel like stand-up is bigger there than improv. But at the time, improv was like huge. I mean, it still is a huge improv town. But yeah, it's been quite the journey to get to being a professional hobo, for sure.
Now, oh, that's funny. The what's interesting is the improv. You know, I actually studied a little bit of improv. Now, I do sketch comedy. I do a lot of sketch comedy.
Nice.
But improv, though, is different. And I remember my first experience with improv was I actually attended the Gatlinburg Improv Festival. And I didn't know anything about improv, really. And I'm still not I'm not an improv actual person, but I remember being thrown on stage in front of like 200 people, and they were like, "You're a scientist with a failed invention. Go!" You know, and I'm just like, "Holy shit!" You know, what is going on here? And the thinking on your feet. And thank God it was like a 70-year-old woman working with me who saved me. You know, but
yeah,
but you could really pick up. There's a lot of skill you pick up though with improv. Especially now with crowd work and stuff like that and stand up.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for the time that I did it. And there's three like improv schools in Chicago, and I've taken the improv classes. I didn't finish the one at Improv Olympic, but I've done all three of them, and they all just have different kind of philosophies about it. And Second City was the first one I did, and their program is to like teach you to do improv using games like they had on Whose Line Is It Anyway. So it's all short form stuff where like it's all more fast paced and things like that. And the whole point of their program is to train people how to use improv as a writing tool to develop sketch comedy. So I have a lot of respect for like that process, using improv as a writing tool on stage. I'm grateful to have like, you know, my wits about me for, yeah, like keeping it. I kind of made fun of myself on stage the other day where I have a really sneaky way of making it seem like I'm doing crowd work by like just kind of asking kind of vague questions of the room and making it seem really personal. But the truth is I don't want to talk to anybody. then other improv theaters, like the Improv Olympic had its own thing, its own format, the Herald. And then Annoyance is the other theater in Chicago where their whole thing is like, what is your particular kind of funny? Like whatever your thing is, do that like the most. Their other thing, though, at Annoyance is they're really big on initiations and making a strong initiation. And that's something that I've kept of like, just go, just do something, you know, make a bold move like right away. And then that's the suggestion part for you where they said, be a scientist with no whatever in a failed dimension or something. And then you're like stuck because you hadn't planned on that. But somebody has to jump in and like make any move, and then you just play off of that. But yeah,
when you think of it that way too, I mean, and I'm giving much love to improv, my improv folks, my improv friends. But I mean, that's probably something they can carry over in life with everything. I mean, making
big time.
You know, wow, I didn't even really think of it that way. But you know, what's also funny, what you say about what crowd work, that's true. I think that's true. I do a lot of crowd work. You know, I interact with the audience a lot and I ask them a question, but it's like, you know, I want to know, but I don't want you to talk too much, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. People have complimented me for doing great crowd work sometimes. And I'm like, okay. Like, I mean, I've done a few where it felt more like crowd control than crowd work. People be getting rowdy, but yeah, it's, I feel like I'm really sneaky about it because I find a way to make it just enough interaction where they feel like, oh, maybe I'm just telling this joke just to them and it's special in this moment. But the truth is it just takes a little bit of that interaction to get them really tuned into it. So
I loved it. I watched your clip at Zany's in Chicago and I love that. I thought that, especially the way you brought out to the show. And now listen, let me ask you this. Okay, so you've been in the stand-up comedy 10 years. And now was this, you have a Jewish background, correct?
I do, yeah. And also that Zany's one is an example of zero crowd work because that was for a TV taping for a local Chicago stand-up comedy show. So that's me like cranked under the most pressure and heavy eyeliner because their makeup artist did it weird. And like, yeah, just like knowing for sure word for word what's going to happen up there in that 10 minutes. Whereas like, you know, now it's definitely evolved into just trying to enjoy the moment and play with the crowd a little bit more and doing longer sets, like headlining stuff gives you a lot more time to explore that for sure. What was the question?
Well, here, I just want to talk about the beautiful side of some of my favorite.
Oh, being Jewish.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
First of all, I love performing for a room full of Jewish people. Absolutely.
Yeah, they're not complainers.
But they love me. Okay, that's all I'm gonna say. They love me. I love. But this is one thing about the Jewish culture, especially in America, is the background in show business, and it's almost like, I mean, I guess the stereotype is if you're Jewish, well, you better be a little funny at least. You know what I mean? So
I mean,
you grow up around a funny family? Was your family funny? What made Rena funny?
My family was troubled, so that made me funny.
Every comic, okay, I'll say that every comic. All right, you're screwed up a little like the rest of us. All right. Yeah.
I will tell you this though, which you will probably be fascinated by, I hope, is that the Hebrew language is full of puns. Like the way Hebrew is like. Yeah, it's set up. There's just lots of puns in the language, which I couldn't, like, I mean, even like the word, same with like aloha, shalom, it means hello, goodbye, and peace. There's a lot of like double entendres, double meanings, like written into the Hebrew language. So I don't really speak it, but I used to. And yeah, there was the other thing, like the equation of like tragedy plus time equals comedy. And we like keep getting kicked out of countries and stuff, you know, our whole legacy of being alive. So I don't know. We've just had a lot of humor's a deflection thing, too, where like, I don't know, let's say somebody wants to like kill your race. You could be like, hey, what about you ever seen wooded? Hey, fun mustache, you know, like make light of it. I don't know.
Well, I like I said, I love Jewish people. And another thing, they love magicians. So, hey, except Jesus, they were the only magician. But besides,
oh, I know.
seriously though, some of the greatest shows in, you know, I've funnest shows I've done is like Hanukkah. You know, so much fun. So, and I noticed, I was like, gosh. You know, it's different, the different type of crowds you do work for, you know what I mean? You pick up on different crowds and audiences. And I tend to have my favorite type of audiences, you know, it seems like. I mean, I've always like a demographic of a mix, but sometimes when you do some of those type of gigs where you might do a room where it's pretty much a complete, you know, everyone in the audience is black, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I enjoy those shows too. I love those shows.
I mean, I sometimes when I'm performing for like an event where it's all like for a synagogue or something, which I just did a Zoom show for a synagogue. And I mean, just to illustrate my point of when I said they're not complainers, that Zoom show had designated laughers, which a lot of Zoom shows do. They'll have people like who have agreed to have their microphone on just so that we can audibly hear the laughter to make it feel like a real show. While everybody else is muted and making popcorn or jerking off or whatever they're doing. And then, or both. And then this synagogue show ended up muting the laughers because too many of the audience members were complaining that the sound of the laughter was like ruining the show for them. They couldn't hear.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's
And I
hilarious.
also feel sometimes like people. When I talk about being Jewish, I was raised super, super Jewish. I was born in Israel, and like
Wow, that's
all of my s siblings have names that have like a phlegm noise in them. No, I'm just kidding, but really. So I feel like sometimes, and I'm maybe a little bit, I'm not a practicing Jew anymore. I have a joke about that where I say, I'm not a practicing Jew, but I'm never going to quit. We need the numbers. So I feel like sometimes they get a little bit excited that I'm Jewish, but then disappointed that I'm like not like a good Jew.
So you're not religious. Are you considering
No.
yourself? I'm not either. And you know what's okay, just to kind of
I
give
got
the background.
Sorry.
Well, no, the background with me is a lot of magicians, you know, leave religion once you really study the art, because you learn why people think the way they do and how easily people are duped and deceived into believing things. That's kind of like what happened to me. I went from a full-blown atheist. Well, I went from Southern Baptist here in Tennessee, you know, growing up,
Yeah, I
to
was gonna say raised atheist. Wow,
no, I wasn't.
progressive.
Definitely wasn't raised atheist, but went to full-blown atheist. And then I the past few years, I've gravitated towards the definition of spiritual.
I love that you said that.
Well, I always used to kind of make fun of that definition, is back before I really truly started to really understand and open my mind to some things. But I mean, I'm not religious. I'm not into any rule book, you know. But spirituality is something real.
I
And
mean, yeah, that's something that's been running around my head a lot, specifically that word. And thinking about how, yeah, I mean, some of the curtains peeled back and the magic of anything is ruined when you actually can like see the dynamics of how a crowd adapts and, you know, moves and is motivated or
you know,
disgusted or.
like the energy in a room, like Rena, when you're on stage and you're killing it, okay, and they're all laughing at what you created up here, you know, and people are laughing at that. There's that energy, you know, that energy that it flows around that room. There's something going on, you know, that there's really something going on.
Well, more so I was gonna say, like, 'cause I was raised real Jewish, but I mean, in America. And I was raised in like a very Jewish community, but my mother's family was Catholic, and so we would go to her aunt and uncle's house for like Christmas and stuff. And my dad, there are plenty of parents that probably raise their kids like either in, I don't know, just to kind of celebrate all things, or you know, just not think too hard about any of it. But my dad, at a very young age, like basically told us that. Because we would ask, like, what's up with Santa or Jesus, right? And his whole thing was basically like, oh, yeah, that's all bogus. Like, everything they believe is ridiculous and it's all a lie. And so, at a really young age, kind of having to grapple with this, like, wait a minute, how come what they believe isn't right, but what we believe is right? That doesn't really make any sense. Like, how do we know we're right? And how do we, you know, like, and then as an adult, realizing that I was missing so much of like social like interaction stuff, like normal childhood stuff and memories and things that people have, because I was raised like not allowed to do any of that stuff and assimilate. My parents wanted us to move to Israel, so they really were like not trying to get us involved in the world we lived in. Anyway, so I like didn't really believe any of that stuff for my whole like adult life as much, when it comes to like organized religion. And also the last few years I've been feeling like a lot more connected to my own spirituality, and I think a lot of my like faith principles have to do with like more of like along like the teachings of Buddhism. But it's also I don't know what I'm trying to say. This might offend some people, but
Don't worry, don't worry. Yeah,
also June, I will say this is June that we're recording in. June, I found out, is PTSD Awareness Month, and I got diagnosed with PTSD a few months ago, which is something that I didn't know I had, and I've been learning a lot about. And there's a lot of people that go through CPTSD, complex PTSD, when they are confronted with like a moral injury is what it's called, when you're like confronted with your whole foundation of what you've been raised to believe, maybe not aligning with your current reality. And just like, we're all organized religion, all of them are so oppressive to everyone's thought process when it comes to like telling people, yeah, they instill morals, but there's also like the rules, right? So everybody's kind of raised in a way that can mess people up to believe what is or isn't acceptable or right or wrong, or what is hateful, what is love. And I had this kind of like, it felt like an epiphany even just like a week ago, thinking about this, about how faith is fear-based. Like,
Yeah.
people have faith because they're afraid if they don't, something bad will happen. They are afraid of what happens when you die. They need to have faith in the afterlife. You need to have faith that you're doing the right thing, that something is like telling you're okay. And I'm not about that. I don't want to live in fear. And so I'd rather do the scary thing of like looking at reality, which is not pleasant or easy, but then through doing that more focused and mindfully, like the spirituality has really come out more and more, as especially being on the road and stuff like that. There's just so many times that I put myself specifically even in places like going to the national parks, so I can be in a moment where I'm like fully aware that the universe is enormous and I'm just a tiny part of it, and that there's something bigger than me. So, yeah, this got super deep, but
No.
that's just what happened in my head last week.
Okay, first of all, I'm with you. I'm with you 100% on that. And I do a lot of thinking in and I have evaluated Christianity, a lot of things that I was growing up and taught. And I'm not, anyone listening, if you're a Christian or if you're Jewish or whatever it is you are, I'm not knocking it, it's just not for me. And I'm not a fan of organized religion. I mean, I could go on and tell you a 10,000 reasons why, but at the same time, I believe in a God. Okay, now, and this is how I always break God down. I think, I hope there is a God, but I don't think God is all powerful. And I like to think the God that we have, that exists, is emotionally connected with us, but is not all powerful. Because if that God is all powerful, then that God is a piece of shit. And because what I'm saying is, because there's children dying of cancer, there's these bad things going on in the world, and if you're not fixing the problem just because you're trying to prove a point, well then you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So I choose not to believe in that God. I choose, and this is the other thing, is kind of where I want to get to, is I believe we're all gods of our own universe. So you get to choose what God you want to believe in, that guides your life, and that believing in a higher power helps your life better, helps make it better for you on this rock. Then why not? You know what I mean? Why
Yeah.
not do it? So, but no, I'm with you 100%. And hey, I like getting deep on the Abracadam podcast. This is an interesting conversation.
Yeah. I mean, that's my favorite thing about talking to comics is that there's no such thing as small talk. It's so funny. My neighbor is also my landlord here. I live with my brother, so it's not even my house, but he's always outside, and like, there's no way to like go outside and go to your car, go do anything out there without him having a job. Like, he's just, I don't know if he's like, she doesn't let him in the house. Is he's just there all the time? But it's so funny to me how like, I was desperate to participate in any social activity for like a year. And now I will do anything to avoid small talk with this man. Like, I refuse. But yeah, on the note of that, like, I definitely believe in a higher power, and I believe in, like, you know, that we are all connected. And one of the beautiful things that Judaism has taught me is that, like, God is, I mean, even that word is just a word. Like, the concept of what God is supposed to be too much, too huge, too God-like for a physical human body to even behold or understand. And so I guess my spirituality is like trusting that there's things that I'm not even able to know, you know, and that I don't want to know. And like, just, yeah, like having gratitude for my ability to like be anywhere or feel anything. And just, I don't know if you watched any of Conan O'Brien's like wrap up shows that he did last week, but I've been watching clips from that. And his final farewell video, he said something that, like, I've been saying stuff like this for a while to, like, you know, in close conversations with people, but about how, you know, I can't remember what he said, but basically, like, being on earth and getting to do what you love with the people you love is as close as it gets to heaven. Like, that's heaven, you know?
And, you know, and I tell people all the time this. First of all, I love Conan, and I hate to see him not, you know, gosh, I love him.
Well, he's doing whatever's next. He's not done. Yeah.
Well, I love to see gingers make it in show business. Yeah. But I tell people all the time, you know, because one thing you hear in show business all the time, they're like, so when you make it, are you going to remember me? And I'm like, whoa, make it. Dude, I get paid to tell jokes and show magic tricks. I've already made it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, people pay you to tell jokes, you know? I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
When you think about it. So, you know, and I embrace that. And I always, you know, I'm not perfect at this, but I always try to embrace the moment as much as I can, because, you know, we don't know how much time we have here. We have no clue. Yeah. And that's another thing. I always say this. This is just things that have opened my mind the past 2 years. I'm not this guru, magic boy, you know, he's guru. But to me, the real currency, because, you know, as a starving artist, you know, we're not rich, you know, at least I know I'm not.
Thank you for calling me starving. Like, I have lost weight, but it's like, oh, it's been a struggle.
But I mean, I tell people, I was like, the real currency that we have is our time, because we don't know how much we have of it. And so as soon as you can find out how much time it takes to maintain your happiness, the better off you are, the least amount of time that it's going to cost you to maintain your happiness. So, you know, people who do work those 9-to-5 jobs, not knocking them, thank God we have you people who work real jobs, but people who are constantly chasing a dollar or working that overtime just because they want to afford that new truck, you know, that's, to me, I think that's garbage. You know, it's that time that's precious to you. You need to hold on to.
Yeah. Well, you can't, but absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's because, well, you don't know how much of it you have, but you need to spend it as much as you can doing what you love, being around the people you love.
Man, when I started touring was like, I mean, it's really been like 5 years that I've been doing it a lot, but really like a significant, like, life-changing moment where I like made that transition into like this being what I'm doing was in 2018. And man, on that, That was at that point, that was the longest I'd ever done, where all the little runs that I'd set up for myself were like the longest one was like 17 days, and that was already a lot. But then I booked myself for like a whole summer, like 40 days or whatever, something like that. And yeah, I knew that was gonna like either like, be awesome or like ruin me mentally. But I was on a real whole trip that time. And yeah, there were some mushrooms involved that kicked this off, this thought process. But just even thinking about like the sounds that I'm making and putting into the universe. 'Cause if you look at like nature, like the soundscape of nature is something in itself of like, if there's like a species that goes missing from an environment, like the other parts of that environment can tell because they're used to hearing that sound, or that's how they can tell if something new is in the environment. And I'm just like, man, all I do is make sound. That's all I'm doing. All I'm doing is just making sound every night in front of so many people that I don't even see. 'Cause at that time I was working like, 7, 8 nights a week in Chicago, multiple shows a night. And it's like, you take for granted when you get really caught up in it, like you take for granted how incredible it is and like how powerful it is to like actually connect with other human beings that have their own perception of that room, Like that is wild. I would, yeah, I mean,
It's magic.
yeah. Well, that's what Conan said. That's what Conan said. He was talking about how with comedy, like he's always had a great admiration and struggle to attain, like finding that perfect balance between stupid and smart. And that when you can find a way to be both stupid and smart and like silly, that is, there's magic. There's magic involved, and it's magic when it's working. And yeah, that magic when you can feel the energy in a room, like
And
it's
that's like your
strong.
background bit that I love so much. So there
Thank
you go.
you. Yeah.
Well, this is interesting. So I want to talk about this because there's not a, I haven't done this, and I don't think there's a lot of comics that have done this, but you've performed in 46 states.
45. Well, 46 if you count DC as the state that it should be by now, because I did perform in Maryland in DC. But yeah, 40, let's say 46, because I hate 45.
So tell me what, okay, what started this? Did you just like, you know what? I want to perform in every single state. Is it just like, did you set a goal for yourself? And
No, I mean, honestly, all the touring that I was doing before, and even calling it touring is generous. It was just me like booking enough stops to make it to wherever I had to go for, family emergencies, or I mean, not emergencies because it was time to book it, but family stuff or weddings, things like that. I would just kind of like plan my travel and try to make money to justify the cost of the necessary trip through doing shows on the way. And it started off doing like, I mean, yeah, like spots on open mics or whatever I could get. Like my first tour in particular, I remember it was like all guest spots on the way down to Texas, and then on the way back up from Texas, I was like, "Oh my God, I'm headlining? What?" I don't think I have 45 minutes, but okay. And yeah, and then all that just kind of started happening where it felt like a grind, and so I started trying to be like mindful and set intentions for all of these things. Like, okay, well, if I'm going to drive 2,000 miles next month, I want to go somewhere I haven't been before. So, all of the comedy scenes that you hear about being great, I just kind of like wanted to go to all of them without even planning it. It just kind of unfolded that way. And then I'd done enough of these trips with stops on the way to get to places like Atlanta and Denver and Portland and Nashville. Like I'd done enough of these trips where one day I just like counted and was like, oh, I've performed in like 30 something states already.
Wow, that is so cool.
So
I
I
love
decided to
that.
make a goal. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because this is something that I wonder a lot, because there's some regions in the United States I have not been. And did you notice any challenges, like difference from where, like from you're from Chicago, but when it gets
Whatever do you mean? Jewish lady in a Prius in the Bible Belt? What are you talking about?
That there are Jewish people here. They're just, you got to really look. You got to really look for them, you know. But well, I mean, how did you deal with that? How did you handle that? Did you kind of? Well, let me ask you this: did it teach you to maybe how to read a room a little better? Do you think you got something out of that like that?
Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, part of the whole goal of the 50 states thing, too, was just that, like, I just decided, like, when people introduce you, you want to have credits people have heard of, and people have heard of the 50 states. So I figured I would just, like, earn that credit however long it took, and it was going to be finished last May. I had Alaska and Hawaii were the trips I had canceled right when COVID started. And even to plan those, making a living off of comedy was, anyway, I'm not still upset. But, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the purpose of doing it was to create a credit that I felt proud of, but also to be able to say about my act, like, you know, these jokes have made people laugh in 50 states. Like, I know I believe in my act. Yeah. Like, this act works because I've tried it everywhere. And my act has also never been the same twice, and it's always evolving because I'm
it's never a masterpiece, you know. I actually had this conversation with another performer, and, you know, somebody had considered their stuff a masterpiece. And I was like, dude, it's never a masterpiece. It's never, it's always ongoing and growing and changing and evolving.
Yeah. I hosted a mic in Chicago for 8 years when I was around. And yeah, if I'm not coming up with something new, or like improving what I'm working on in some way, then I don't want to do it. You know, like, it has to stay exciting. Some of the best laughs you get, we're talking about that magic. Some of the best laughs you're going to get on any set were moments that just happen in the moment that you could never duplicate. But specifically when you're talking about the challenges, I got to say I have quite a long chunk now of abortion material. Because the thing is, every time it has met resistance, it has grown. Like, grown as in, oh, she's talking about abortion. but I have so many so many tactics to be able to even get people to hear those jokes. It really started as like one joke, and then it really turned into like a 10, 11, 12 minute tight chunk of material. Because yeah. And I just added another one recently where people got tense about it. And I said, you know, I was talking about sperm, and I said, well, that went swimmingly. And it's like, well, that's another one. I'm going to just keep adding to these list of jokes. Yeah.
I want to praise you on that, because that's one thing that you do very well. And going back, you know, there's, like I said, I don't think any topic is off the table, but not every comic has a skill level to tell that topic joke, you know. And what you're doing is you're taking a topic that is a difficult conversation for most people to hear.
And well, it's weird because it's like a difficult conversation for most people to hear unless it's on a highway billboard, or exactly. Unless we already settled it 20 years ago, but we're talking about it again and somehow it's more difficult.
Well, that's the beautiful thing that you do right off the bat, because, you know, I picked that up right away. I was like, oh, I love the point that she is driving there with the billboards. You're okay if it's plastered on a billboard outside of Hardee's, you know, but, you know, to talk about it now, you have issues. But like what you're doing, though, also, though, you're making people, you're making them comfortable by using your humor, using your puns. And that's a skill level. That, you know, that's that next skill level in comedy.
So, honestly, probably one of like the biggest compliments I've ever gotten, because I think I was doing probably some intense material. Somebody told me afterwards, like, whatever you're up there, I just feel like safe. Like, whatever you say, it's going to be okay. And I'm like, wow, that's massive. Like, yeah.
I don't do a lot of political material in my show, but there is one on the political side of things that I'm very dug into, and that's the LGBTQ. You know, I've got a gay son. So, you know, I wrote some bits, you know, straight dad, gay son. And sometimes on stage, I talk about that with, you know, my hopes of, you know, that guy in the audience who, you know, may have a fear of his son being gay, you know, letting him know, look, dude, it's okay. You know, this is my goal is to, my goal is to open your mind with humor, with the jokes, when I do anything political.
There's a lot of, people right now who are, trying to get back to normal as if that's even an option. That's not how time works. It's not how any of this works. And so my mentality while trying to like go into these topics that might be difficult has always been just like, and still is, just trying to make sure I have people on board, that they feel safe, that I believe in the joke being funny enough that even if they don't like that I'm talking about it, I will make them laugh. And that's such a good feeling when you have that person laugh, even though you know they hated that you started the topic. Like, I believe in the jokes enough that like I can use them as a vehicle to say whatever I'm going to say. But in general, where I'm at is that that's absolutely ridiculous, that dynamic. The idea that there's somebody who's stuck in a past that we've all agreed to move on from and evolve past. That person who's offended in the front row or wherever that has their arms crossed, that person who's offended that I came to their town, that I went to Appleton, Wisconsin, and had the nerve to talk about sexuality, I'm offended that they're offended now. It's changed. Mm-hmm. They're no longer, time's up, like I'm not waiting for people to catch up to progress, like get on or get out of here. Like, there's plenty of people who are not going to challenge. I mean, not to be whatever, but I remember at some point last year, my mom telling me that there was a comedian performing on Fox News, and that just made me so sad for them and for everybody that like, that's how sensitive you are about what you're going to hear and be offended that you have to go to your news station for comedy now. That's crazy. You can't watch Comedy Central because too many people are woke. No, you're not paying attention. Like, get with the program,
Well, and there's things that, I always try to, like, if I bring a lot of volunteers up on stage, and I always like to bring the big macho-iest giant dude I can find and have some fun with him up on stage, things that I wouldn't do, it's like, hey, is your card in my pocket? Get in there. You know what I mean? And if he does get in there, it's even better. It's funny. So I like to kind of break what word am I looking for? Probably like the toxic masculinity. And don't get me wrong. Wow. I'm not, this is the thing. Now, I am, when we do talk politics, I truly identify as an independent, which means I'm on Lonely Island. Everybody hates me, what I mean? So, I don't completely shit on masculinity constantly, but there are some bad traits in it. But there are also some things that are misunderstood,
Yeah.
Like a lot of times, like if two straight guys like each other, it's just like comics. They rip on each other, that means they like you, Now there is a difference. It doesn't mean that they're sticking your head down the toilet and making you eat shit, No, that's different. That's being an asshole, that's a bully. But, yeah. But there is a thin line there. But the problem in this world that we live in right now, the biggest issue that I have is people act like there's no gray area. Everything is either extreme this way or extreme the other way. And in my opinion, both sides going so far are batshit crazy.
Yeah. I've been saying that on stage a lot, even when I talk about labels, about how like, and it makes the room quiet, but I'm glad that I say it. Cause I'll say like, whether you're Democrat or Republican, everyone I know doesn't trust any of them. And then I do talk about like, I've been doing material about the Constitution, which is non-denominational. it's all of ours. Uh-oh. And things like that, where it's like, yeah, I think part of the whole 50 state thing, also the motivation of going everywhere was after 2016 and even having division in my own family, like really believing in that magic of like, if you can get people who maybe don't agree to laugh at the same jokes, there has to be a healing quality to that. So that was like the real passionate part of like, what motivated me to even live like that and do it again, honestly, and recommit with newer, even more political material, to be quite honest.
Let me ask you this, Nina. I got to ask you this, okay? First of all, I keep noticing a mosquito has bit me on the face.
Oh, no. I can't really see. Oh, I see it now.
You see red blotchy on my pale skin. That's anything happens to my face, it shows up for a month.
Yeah, I can't tell if it's like lighting or if you're just really that, you know, you're Irish or really whatever.
Exactly. did a beam of sun just hit you right there for 5 seconds? But okay, let me ask you this, because this is what I wonder. Okay, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Okay.
Well, I got a follow up with that toxic masculinity thing, but I'll put a pin in that. Oh, okay. Yes, sir.
I'll tell you what. Let's do that. Let me go ahead and let you get that out, so because we can move on. Because I want to ask you a question about the state you're in. What about the toxic masculinity?
Well, first of all, people get so defensive and so like butthurt about anything. Where I remember I did a show in Amarillo, Texas, I think, that like I said something about the word progress, and this guy in the front row was like, and I had to stop the show and remind him, I'm like, whatever you believe, let's just understand progress is good. We want progress. And like, I got him on board enough to laugh at the rest of my jokes, but it's like, it's so funny he got defensive about me talking about progress because he did not have teeth. Okay. So it's like, you're getting judged by you. Okay. But I was going to say that about the toxic masculinity thing. I had a guy after a show in Portage, Indiana, come up to me, and this guy thought he was like the biggest feminist in Indiana because the whole crowd was rowdy. But anytime I started saying something progressive, this guy like would tell everybody, shut up, listen to this, it's important, shut up. And it's like, you're also heckling, but thank you. So he was trying to, and again, with the buzzwords, you know, forgive me, but he was basically mansplaining toxic masculinity to my friend and I after the show. I was there with another comic, a lady, she's standing next to me. He's explaining to her the concept of toxic masculinity. And I'm like, woof, you can have him. Cause I'm dealing with my own Indiana man over here, but I tuned into their conversation. I swear to God, I promise you, like I'm working on trying to say this on stage. Cause this is exactly what he said. I heard this man say, yeah, toxic masculinity is really bad. You know, it's what it is. Toxic. It's really bad. But, you know, if I can be fair, to be honest, around here, the guys are really only about as toxic as the women are fat. You know what I mean?
God.
He thought he was being, like, helpful.
What a dude.
But anyway,
well, you know,
yeah.
One thing that I bring this up, you know, I tell me and my wife have this conversation a lot. Probably one of the biggest issues that men have, and it's the way, even me, I was raised this way. Almost most men are raised to hide your emotions. You can't cry because that will show weakness, and weakness is bad if you're a man, if you show weakness. Now, I am by no means making any excuses for a man that gets physical with a woman. I am no means giving permission to that at all. No, that's bad. If you do that, you're a giant piece of shit. But a lot of the times when a man does not know how to express his emotions correctly, he turns physical. He turns violent because that's what was taught to a lot of men to deal with other men. Whenever there's an issue, that's where, you know, two boys will fight in the schoolyard because of, you know, this guy really hurt my feelings and I want to cry about it, but I can't show him. So let's fight. So you take that same little boy thinking that some men can never really deal with the process, and you get a lot of toxic dudes out of it in the long run, you know?
Yeah.
I never raised my son to hide his emotions. I don't think that's the right way how to raise a child. You know, feel free to express your emotions, let it out, don't let it build up. But unfortunately, I think so when we talk about toxic, that's a topic that people aren't really talking about, though. You know, that's not brought up when it comes to the issue with toxic in with males. But
You just said it all too, and like when people have a problem with it, they get defensive. They think of it, they associate it with like cancel culture and like, oh, the feminists are women are bad and they're hurting men now. And it's like, man, like aside from the fact that women have are saying, hey, stop hurting us, aside from that part of it, like, dudes, you're hurting. You're hurting so much. Be hurt. It's okay. You're hurting, you know, like that's. You know, talking about PTSD, like fight is one of the trauma responses that, you know, I think probably, I don't know, with the way that our society is, I'm sure a lot of men, especially if they've had trouble in their youth or, you know, like bad stuff happen to them, they're gonna become extra fighty and be more assholes because that's the only way they even know how to like protect themselves and defend themselves. Everybody wants to be safe. Everybody. You know,
absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely, 100%. And you know, you brought the you know, the post-traumatic stress. I think I deal with that some too on a level. You know, had some crappy things happen to me as a kid, and it kind of carries over. Yeah, I was seeing a therapist for a little while, and you know, remember this used to be like something you kept secret. You know, don't say anything about it. But I'm gonna tell y'all, if y'all's listening, get you some of that therapy, but just
Yes.
make sure you get a good one because I'm not seeing the same one anymore. I gotta find another therapist. So if there's a therapist listening,
Yeah.
hit me up, Superman.
I
But
wish. I wish they would like follow you on Instagram and get a catch of your vibe before you know, spend time like dating. You know what I mean? Like, can you just like scroll my stuff for a while and follow me for a few weeks, you know?
But th therapy is a really good thing, especially for dealing with that. And it's
Well, it's also very like very common and very underdiagnosed, and it's like it's a thing where we're really good at putting band-aids on things, and like even the epidemic of like depression and anxiety that's happening right now, a lot of it comes from CPTSD, and a lot of generations of that is passed down literally in your genes and your DNA from past trauma. So yeah, we just have more awareness of it now, more words for it, I think, you know.
absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. Let's get to the stakes.
Speaking of trauma.
Speaking of trauma, the Jewish girl on her travels. That's Southeast. But here. The okay. What okay, let me say this. If you had to pick three states, what were your three favorite states to do comedy in?
Yes.
I'm not talking about beauty, but I'm talking about to do comedy in.
That is tough. That is tough. Because it, honestly, just like it depends on like the best shows, really, you know, and the best scenes. I will say I gotta give a shout out to Missouri, actually, surprisingly.
Missouri.
Well, to be fair, not any of the middle of it. None of that. But St. Louis has been like a second home to me, and that's one of the first places I ever started performing at when I left Chicago. And so, like, they've given me some of my earliest chances with headlining and stuff like that. Springfield was the first place I did 45 minutes. I have one of my best jokes from getting stoned at a military base in the middle of Missouri. So, but that was like south, not the middle. The middle, all bad. And then Kansas City is one of my favorite places to perform. I mean, I never would have guessed that. But the comedy scene there is so wonderful and never disappoints. I've had such great times performing in Kansas City. And I think it's because they kind of get slept on. So like they kind of have this like underdog vibe about them of like, you know, they, yeah, not everybody goes through Kansas City, so they should. And also like maybe I don't want them to, because then it'll be less great for me. I mean, like yeah, literally some of my like most validating comedy moments happened like in LA or in New York, because you're like, ah, I'm making it. But like yeah, it's like stressful to plan those trips sometimes, or expensive or whatever. I can't believe I picked Missouri and that's it. Like, what? What? I can tell you, not Delaware. Woof. Not Delaware. I'm just like running through states and it's so hard to pick a favorite. Yeah, Georgia. Well,
Atlanta, right? You were in Atlanta.
Atlanta has been great. I mean, they're all great. Honestly,
Wait a minute.
Did I honestly,
Tennessee, right?
Tennessee is great. Yeah. Between Nashville and Memphis and like a bunch of stuff in between, for sure. There's definitely some good stuff in Tennessee. And like, that's the thing. You're asking me to pick my three favorites when literally all year or the last year, I've been like, I don't even know where I want to live anymore because everywhere is cool and sucks.
That, you know what, Rena Calm? Okay, we'll leave it at that because that was a perfect answer. That was a perfect answer. And also, guys, she loves Tennessee. She said it. She loves Tennessee. So we got to get Rena back.
I do. I want to go to Dollywood so bad.
Yes, yes. You got to go to Dollywood. And, you know, when I go to Dollywood, we've been talking about actually going to Dollywood, and we never go because, you know, we live somewhere, we never go there. But I want to go just for the cinnamon bread. You know, I'm old now, so I just want to go eat the cinnamon bread. But, okay, well, let's do this. All right, here on the Abracadabra Podcast, we asked everybody to tell a hell gig story. I know you got some. And all the states, everywhere you've been, I know you got some hell gig stories.
Well, I already mentioned Portage, Indiana, so we can skip that one. But woof. I will say a quick one is one time I did a podcast in South Dakota with a comic there in Sioux Falls, and he was asking the same thing of like, tell a story about like a nightmare show. And I was on it, me and Jessica Michelle Singleton, who's hilarious. We were doing this podcast and both of us were like, you know what? I haven't really had any really bad shows. Like, you know, bad stuff happens, but whatever. Cut to that night. We drove to Rapid City, South Dakota, and wow, what a horrible show. That one was so like, it was like a prank. It was like, we tempted the fates. We asked for that because, well, first, like, it wasn't sure if it was happening. There was no microphone or comedy person. It was just a bar that seemed like skeptical of us. And so finally somebody showed up. We got a mic and an amp and just started in the corner of this bar with the show was so bad that like, there were people sitting like very close to us at the bar that didn't turn around the whole time. They watched us with their backs to us. And they were like laughing. You'd see them like laughing, but like never turned around. And then like one of them at the end said to us that they just thought it would be awkward if they looked at us. So they just sat like this the whole time. And then at one point, a really drunk guy popped out of wherever and like kind of was like drunk and like approaching the stage area, which was unwanted. And then, like, it got aggressive. Like, Jessica was kind of, like, she was on stage at this point. She's kind of, like, backed up against the popcorn machine or whatever the hell's going on. And then this dude pulled his pants down and, like, all of his pants and was mooning her, like, bent over mooning Jessica. And she's, like, already retreating, but, like, basically climbing up the popcorn machine now, like. And then this guy's wasted, so he's not paying attention, but he stands up. You know, at that point he's front mooning everyone. He stands up and he goes, "What, am I the asshole?" And it's like, yes, like literally. Yeah. But honestly, like the crowd was like split on like who was wrong in that situation, you know? So
the crowd
that one comes to mind. Yeah, they were kind of like, they were friends with him. So they were kind of like enjoying what he was doing, even though, you know what I mean? Like when it comes to like,
Billy's so
okay?
funny. Look, his wiener. Billy, yeah.
Yeah,
that's, yeah, that yeah. Guy. Oh my God, that's horrible.
But I will say like the first hour I ever did was when I only probably had 10 minutes of material. And just the quick version of that story was that I was on a party bus as a surprise for a bachelorette party on a day trip to go see Belinda Carlisle, and it really dissolved, and it was like a really bad moment, and it was a really bad bachelorette party, and
Oh
yeah,
my
I could
God.
go.
So that was early in comedy for you, right? That was
Yeah, it was very new. There was no microphone. I was just holding on to a van strap, and there was like coolers flying at me.
You know, that's the worst. That's like, you do know the worst group at a comedy club or bachelorette parties. That's like the nightmare.
I
And
thought you were going to say
you
Jews again. No,
can't
I'm just kidding.
do it. I love my Jews. I
Yeah.
love them.
No, the
They
bachelorette parties are rough, and this was just a bachelorette party. And my material, I mean, it was not clean, and the parents were there. It was so unfortunate. Then I was a surprise. The bride doesn't like comedy, and then she got motion sickness. So, like, the second half of the ride was me being like, "Are you okay?" And then just kind of doing a weird Q&A with the other guests. And then when we got to the concert, they were like, "Do you want to come watch Belinda Carlisle with us?" And I was like, "No, I got to get back to town." And so I went to go wait for the train, but I had the wrong schedule. So my train wasn't coming for like 2 more hours. And then my phone died. And so, like, I said I didn't want to watch the concert with them. But then, like, an hour later, a couple of them saw me, like, really sad, hanging out by the train tracks and were like, "Do you want to come watch the concert with us?" I did.
Oh,
So, yeah, it's less the story of a horrible show and more the story of how I saw Belinda Carlisle.
I love that. Hey, I do gotta add, first of all, funny. I love that. Especially, you know, a lot of comics will do that too in the early days. They'll take a gig when they don't actually have the whole material,
Yeah.
the stuff. So if there are any of you young comics out there listening, listen to Rena Kalm's story.
It was really awkward.
I gotta talk about your background real quick because what is up with the, okay, it kind of looks like maybe a turkey, like, you know, like
This?
Thanksgiving turkey. What is it? It's
It's
not a
just
Thanksgiving turkey, but what is it?
it's a turkey's anus. That's what it
Exactly.
is. It's a
Oh my
very
God. Did you,
it's
that is amazing because that's exactly what that is now. That's a turkey's ass.
Yep.
Turkey's
It's very
butthole.
zoomed in. This is where you would get the stuffing out. You would just reach, tunnel through here, and
Well, you
pull
kind of
out.
do. That was kind of an illusion that you just did there, Rena Kalm.
Thanks.
There we go. It really looked like your hand was going up the turkey's ass. So I love
Wow, I'm honored.
Okay.
This
Well,
is
now.
actually just like a really, this is actually kind of spiritual. So I mean, we can make jokes, but this actually has really deep meaning. I got it on Amazon.
Nice. Well, cool. I like it. I'm digging it. And this is really what my room looks like. No, just kidding.
Wow.
I
So
actually,
vibrant.
oh, and anyways, let's do this. On the Abracadabra podcast, Rena Kalm, we're gonna do some magic. Yes, we're gonna do some magic. Hold on real
I'm
quick.
excited.
I'm gonna
Youch.
come. Here we go. Watch this. Wait a minute, we're gonna try to I do this for everybody too. This has like become like a trait magic trick right here. But we're through Zoom, so it's not like I can have you actually pick a card, you know what I'm saying? So I'm gonna try to get inside your head, sister, and redecorate is what we're gonna do. Okay. I'm gonna try to read your mind. Do you believe in psychics? Do you believe in this stuff?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Let's see here. I tell you what, Rena, I want you to think of one of these cards. Just think of one. Don't say it. Just think it. Get inside your head. Is it in there?
It's in there.
It's in there. Here we go. Let's see. I'm going to shuffle the cards. I don't want it to lose it in the cards. I tell you what I'm going to do, I'm going to cut the deck. All right. I'm going to cut it right here. So I've got two. I've cut the deck. I'm obligated. Okay, I'm obligated. For the first time, what was the card you were thinking of?
Three of diamonds.
The three of diamonds. Now, I
Yes.
said I cut the deck. I'm obligated right here. All you people on Zoom world and YouTube world can see this. the Three of Diamonds.
Wow. Wow. Hey, turkey. Look at this.
Let the turkey see this. This is awesome. And
that's
just
amazing.
Like a comedy show, the turkey's got his back to us. So,
yeah.
But you've been abracadabbed. Yes.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Do you like balloon animals? You know how magicians make balloon animals, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I only know one, but I'm going to, this is just for you. This is special for you, Rena Calm, and I'm going to do just the only one I know. Hold on. Hold on real quick.
This is thrilling. All of the magic sound effects off camera sound not great.
Well, here, check it out. Look, look.
Especially card shuffling.
Look, this is the only one I know, but it's a, it's a bird. Okay, all right. There we go. Okay, well, Rena Calm, now let's get serious again, because we've been serious, like, freaking, you know, this has been a serious, this has been a deep podcast.
Yeah, this one's been heavy.
This has been heavy. People are going to be like, post-traumatic stress, and, oh, you know, so.
It's only heavy when you don't talk about it.
Absolutely. This has been therapy. I've got a new therapist, Rena Calm, ladies and gentlemen. let's do this. Let's get a thought-provoking question. Okay. Now, I'm not big into conspiracies. I'm not, especially now, the way all these douchebags have like ruined conspiracies.
Oh, I know, right? Ugh, it used to be cool.
They used to be fun. But they've totally screwed that up. But anyways, let's do this. If there was a conspiracy about Rena Calm, what would it be?
I will tell you this, that I knew that I was doing something right when I heard a rumor in Chicago that I was rich. And that I came from money, which, I mean, I'm missing a tooth here. Real hobo. But I would say that, yeah, the conspiracy about me is that I'm a hedge fund. And I've just been gathering data all over the country to really upset the market. And like diamond hands, Three of Diamonds, you know, really.
Oh my God, dude, it is all lining up.
It's like, hello, I'm making a money telling jokes, Bitcoin. Come on. You know what I mean? It's deep. God. It's deep.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to start writing all over the wall, trying to see if I can't, you know, put this thing together. I could see it. That's so,
I feel like I could have described both of those things. Like I could have described the conspiracy better if I really knew anything about the stocks or Bitcoin.
That's what you would say, right?
Right. Right. Right.
Okay. Okay. Right. I got it. That's a good answer. I think that's a good answer. And I tell you what, Rena, this, first of all, has been seriously super fun. Super fun. And, you know, like I said, I you can totally be found on YouTube. You can see Rena Calm's fantastic stand-up comedy all over YouTube. All over YouTube. It's just all over the place.
And I might be sleeping in a parking lot near you. I have slept in the Cracker Barrel parking lot near Dollywood. You know what I mean? Like, I get around.
Well, here's the other thing, too. I want to give this a shout out is like one thing I love about your Instagram page is all the beautiful pictures and stuff that you post where you do go when you were traveling. And I thought, well, this is, you know, really cool, you know, to some of the pictures that you take. It was fun.
Thanks.
So and so before we get out of here, though, I want plug this book again real quick. Where can we get Rena Calm's book?
You can find my book on Amazon or my website, which is renacalm.com. And my Instagram has links to both of those things, I think. I don't know. But my Instagram is at renacalm, as seen here. Peace.
She's got props, too. She's props, too. Okay.
Yeah, I got my own tricks. Yeah, I got my own shit over here, man. I got plenty of showbiz tricks happening here.
Oh, that's classic Rena Calm.
This is missing a mustache, but
Classic.
Yeah, follow me on Instagram is like the best way to stay in touch because it's really hard to keep my website updated when I'm touring. But if you follow me on Instagram, I try to keep it fresh, keep it happening, keep all the dates listed. And you can get pictures, copies of my pictures on my Etsy shop, which is also on my website. But yeah, just follow me on Instagram. It would mean so much to me. Oh.
Definitely, guys, follow Rena Calm on Instagram. You won't be disappointed. She's got really cool pictures of all the cool places that she used to do comedy at.
Finishing my final five states this year. So going to get up there and go fight a bear to perform in Montana. So
that is super cool. I have to see that. I have to see that. Well, I tell you what, Rena Calm, this has been a blast. And thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast.
Thank you for having me. And it really looks like a blast because of your backdrop. So
blast.
Thank you.
Watch. More magic.
Whoa.
That's a bottle cap. So
anyway. Man, I think you got a drinking problem.
I do. Yeah. Rena Calm, once again, thank you for coming on to Abracadam.
Thank you.
Comedy.
All right, that does it for that episode of the Abracadam Podcast. Guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Rena Calm. She is hysterical. And I'm telling you, if you guys haven't done so, be sure to hop on YouTube and check out some of her bits on YouTube. They are absolutely hilarious. I absolutely love the earbuds bit. That is so freaking funny. And who knows? She's probably going to be in one of your states. So wherever you're at, be sure to just keep your eyes and ears open for Rena Calm Comedy. And be sure to check out her book, The Book of Puns, there on Amazon. Be sure to check that out also. Guys, if you haven't done so yet, be sure to like and subscribe to the Abracadam Podcast on whatever platform it is that you listen to podcasts on. And be sure to check out the YouTube channel, the Abracadam YouTube channel. This episode, at least 30 minutes of it, will be on YouTube along with some funny memes. So be sure to check that out as well. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
It's awesome!
Or Danny, will you please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party?